As many of you know, we're in the process of a series of sermons, each one of which deals with one of the Unitarian Universalist principles. And this one, which we summarize, especially in our religious education materials, as fairness, reads precisely justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. This supplements and replaces an earlier similar phrase in the Unitarian Universalist principles that were compiled in 1961 during the merger of the Unitarian and Universalist denominations. And that wording says, implement the vision of one world by striving for a world community founded on ideals of brotherhood, justice, and peace. Now, when I first thought, I thought, well, you know, the feminists will change brotherhood, and that'd be it. Well, it wasn't. It was a lot more than that, a lot more interesting than that. Notice how the words, brotherhood, implement, vision, striving for one, it's very abstract and kind of high-sounding rhetoric, distancing almost, and certainly rational. And of course, that one world at the time would have been almost a secret phrase. If you were for one world, that means that you were on the, you know, the left-leaning part of the world, if not the pink and red part of the world, you know. So he wanted to keep that in there in 1961. By 1984, when it was changed, it seemed almost kind of an anachronism. So it was changed to justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Much more elegant, much more simple. And also note how human relations includes both the political and the personal. Note also that the only word that appears more than once in our principles is justice. It appears once here, which justice in human relations, which I think tends more toward justice in interpersonal relations, and later it appears more in terms of what we would call economic or social or political justice. Now, back when I first became a Unitarian Universalist, when I was ordained in 1974, there was not exactly a schism, but sort of two poles of Unitarian Universalist activity. There were the social justice people and the human growth people. In other words, were you more interested in encounter groups or Watergate? But with feminism, we heard, that's okay, Lewis, I recorded my thing, I got it for you. You're all set. Yeah. But anyhow, the second wave feminists came along, one of their main shibboleths was the personal is the political is personal. And that women were not going to be second-class citizens in society anymore, and they sure for certain weren't going to be second-class citizens in Unitarian Universalist congregations anymore. That was clear. And it was no longer enough just to work for justice. We also had to be just toward each other. And I feel that nothing brought home and transformed Unitarian Universalism more than AIDS. Because during the time that AIDS was the great plague, Unitarian Universalists really had to act as the personal was the political, in some very life or death ways and as close as you possibly could. And Unitarian Universalists were in most every community that I know, and I'm sure it's true of this one, were on the forefront of just talking about it, for heaven's sake, finding out what it was, being able to get help to the people and the families to whom it was a scourge. But there's still three big words here, equity, justice, and compassion. Let me address equity first. I've long thought that we, as a society, overlook a primary mathematical fact. And that is equality does not mean the same. 2 + 2 is equal to 4. It's not the same as 4. The equality sign is 2 parallel lines. The identity sign is 3 There's a difference between something being the same and being equal. Men and women are not the same. Men and women are equal. Gay and straight is not the same. Gay and straight are equal. Equity is about the equivalency between yourself and others. It's not about the sameness. In fact, it's about overcoming sameness or overcoming difference and finding the sameness that transcends. And a fundamental fact of realizing equality is that your happiness, your life, is no more or less important than the life and happiness of others. A simple statement, but a big one. Now then, what is justice? Plato asked that question, took it in freshman philosophy. The will of the stronger, blah, blah, blah. To me, justice is equity in action. When you act like your happiness is no more or less important than that of others, you're working for justice. When you overcome difference, when you help others to see that equality doesn't mean the same, you're working toward justice. Now, to me, I think Unitarian Universalists also understand that working for justice isn't just marching in Selma 50 years ago or last week, as important or as critical as that is. But it is also in everyday acts of kindness and everyday unwillingness to be silent in the face of inequality. It's like I told Kyle. We have to find a way to play together. You can either argue, or you can play the game. Now, compassion begins with empathy. Empathy is the ability to understand and share the feelings of others. The great example of empathy, not one of the best, I think, is Bill Clinton's when he said what? I feel your pain. Now, with the benefit of history, we can question whether that was more truly empathy or seduction. But if justice is equity in action, then compassion is empathy in action. Got that? Now, human beings are hardwired for compassion within a small circle. We're hardwired to feel compassionate toward our children, to our families, to our tribe. But the farther you get away from yourself, the more difficult it is for us biologically to feel compassion for the other. So when you get out to things like world community or one world, it really becomes kind of an abstraction. But the idea is to expand the range of one's compassion. Now, all the people, like Dick Cheney, who came out early for gay marriage, why? Because his daughter was gay. God bless him for doing that. But you know, everybody's got somebody gay in their family. It's about time they realized that. Once, just once, I'd like to hear a conservative politician say, I support gay marriage even though I don't have a gay child. I support it just because it's the right thing to do. It's not enough just to put empathy in action. In fact, compassion itself is not enough. Compassion must be applied with wisdom, with what the Buddhists call discernment. There is something called wise wisdom, or bodhicitta. It means kind of the enlightened mind. It means acting with the enlightened mind. And that's certainly something to work toward. But Jogyam Trungpa, really the first Tibetan Buddhist to come to America and bring Buddhism wisely to America, used a term in his teaching that he actually borrowed from G.I. Gurdjieff, a a spiritual teacher of the earlier part of the 20th century, as a counterbalance in teaching bodhicitta or wise compassion. And he called it idiot compassion. Idiot compassion, or unwise compassion, or compassion without discernment. This has many forms. One of those might be called masochistic compassion. This would be the person who gives away all of his or her clothes to the poor and then freezes to death. It is also, in less absurd examples, to tolerate destructive behavior for the sake of inclusion, or to tolerate destructive behavior for any reason. Some people may work for some just cause, and in doing so, neglect their health or their family. Enabling is a primary source of idiot compassion. Feeling sorry for a person or a group such that you excuse or tolerate bad behavior is idiot compassion. Giving an alcoholic a drink because you see his suffering is idiot compassion. And I've done that. I didn't know any better at one time. I haven't done it in a while. Another kind of idiot compassion is actually being nice. My daughter grew up in New Jersey and went to college in Minnesota. Now, in New Jersey, she was considered a very nice, polite young lady. And in Minnesota, she was considered a tough Jersey girl. Because after about one semester, she ran out of patience with what is called Minnesota nice. Because Minnesota nice is a way of avoiding conflict and avoiding what you really feel, and until you just get passive aggressive all over yourself. If any of you have ever lived in the South, you may be familiar with their own brand of niceness. Now, it is possible, and as certainly a number of people work for a just cause because they believe it to be just, or they have faith that they need to work in this. Now, if you do social justice work or compassion out of a sense of faith, you may or may not be a good person, but you're not really a Unitarian Universalist. At least not in the process. You know what two words are nowhere in the Unitarian Universalist principles? Faith or belief. Unitarian Universalist process is not about faith and belief. It's about discernment and making wise choices. Now, what are some characteristics of either wise, discerning compassion or idiot compassion? Well, one of the characteristics of wise compassion, and sometimes this can seem an irony, it feels good. It does not deplete one's resources, either spiritually, energetically, or materially. In fact, wise compassion provides a net increase in resources. The term abundance has gotten all mixed up in our society with materialism and greed. But really, it is about health and integrity and having a flow to your life and not a congestion. It's about not being stuck somewhere. It's about getting somewhere. Now, how does this principle of wise compassion or idiot compassion work in a Unitarian Universalist congregation? How do we make that part of our principles work for us and work in the larger society? Well, we might look at the uses we put our building to over this last 100 and 120 years that we've occupied this building. There are many diverse uses for this. Almost every night, 10 homeless men sleep in the parish hall at Project Hospitality. Almost every afternoon, there are 40 or 50 members of Alcoholics Anonymous that meet here. There is a what's the drug addictions anonymous that meets here sometimes? This is used for concerts. It's used for all sorts of activities. It's used for weddings and receptions. The parsonage has been used for a gazillion years to house the minister, and now it's sometimes being used to house workers on Sandy Relief. So there's a lot of diverse uses, none of which, or very few of which, except maybe the wedding part, would the people who built this church 120 years ago have known it would have been used for, any more than they know that there would have been a video thing up there or electric lights or any number of things that they didn't come with the original property. Now, assuming we're neither a perfectly enlightened congregation nor a confederacy of dunces, let's see how we might move along the path toward more nearly wise compassion. Now, just about every Buddhist teacher, and the wiser amongst the Unitarian Universalists, will say, intent is extremely important. Why are we doing this? Whatever it is that we're doing. Now, are we helping people, the homeless, ourselves, out of an abstract need of what a church ought to do? That's one kind of intention. Are we being very concrete in knowing that regardless of what else we're doing, we're taking 10 men off the streets and giving them a place to sleep? That's not nothing. That's not nothing. So far, I've gotten to know one man who's stayed here a couple of nights. And to make his long story short, he came up here because his ex-wife got into trouble and was losing custody of their daughter, and he came up, and guess what? It took longer for him to get custody of his daughter in New York City than he thought, because he was from Florida. And he ran out of money, and he couldn't afford to stay anyplace. And he stayed here for 2 or 3 days, and I gave him some money out of my discretionary fund, and that tided him over so he could get custody of his daughter. So you know, when you're given 10 men a bed, you might be giving them a lot more than that. But I don't know if that's an excuse not to fix up the parish hall. I don't know why we can't paint it and do the floor. You know, if the homeless people wreck it, we'll do it again. You know, it's not an either-or situation. You know, if we're looking a little shabby, don't scapegoat the people you're helping because you're shabby. Are we moving along toward compassion because we want to look good in the larger community so the minister can feel good about him or herself, to assuage our guilt? Whatever reasons we do what we do, the discernment is extremely important. And also to think, frankly, what else might we do? The homeless and the poor need a heck of a lot more than a place to sleep. They need affordable housing. They need raise in the minimum wage. And one of the problems with compassion is no matter what you do, somebody's going to say, well, you should be doing something else, or you're not doing enough. And that's why you have to work out of a sense of your own compassion and give yourself some credit for your own equity of what you can do or not do, or what as a group we can do or not do. We have to decide and be intentional. A lot of groups like Project Hospitality came out of the early 90s when it was almost like homelessness sort of like sprouted up overnight. And a lot of these things happened sort of ad hoc. And now it's 20 years later and we're still kind of ad hoc. You know, we don't have to be. You know, we can think about this stuff more. We can put more of our resources toward these problems. We can be more intentional. So, no matter where we are, wise or idiots, we can move farther down the line toward wisdom. And finally, People don't realize how unkindly they treat themselves. Large numbers of our population in this congregation and out have been raised with ideas like original sin and shame and guilt, and that in order to be useful to someone else, you have to tear your heart out and present it to them. Loving kindness also means being lovingly kind to yourself. And this, I feel, is a key aspect underlying Unitarian Universalist principles. Applying justice, equity, and compassion in human relationships to self-care. When I came into the ministry, self-care for the ministers was nowhere on anybody's chart. Ministers, in fact, bragged about how exhausted and overworked they were. No more. Ministers are still often overworked and exhausted, but they don't brag about it nearly as much as they used to. They actually try to do something about it. And when I go to ministers' meeting, when I went down to the in Colorado for the ministers' developmental ministers' meeting in the fall, the head of the Department of Ministry was there. The first thing she said, "Are you taking care of yourselves? Are you taking care of yourselves?" God has blessed her for saying that, because that didn't used to be on our professional chart, and it is now. And it needs to be on the chart for all of our members, too. It's the same with the burnout of volunteers. You know, Unitarian Universalists, and we're certainly not the only organization that does this, sometimes treats its volunteers the way teenagers treat their cars. "Oh, you mean I was supposed to change the oil?" Yeah, you're supposed to give it maintenance. You're supposed to keep it lubricated. You're not supposed to burn it out. And if you don't take care, you'll burn it out. It's the same when we make mistakes. We all make mistakes. There is no organization where the volunteers and the staff do not make mistakes. The difference between a compassionate organization and a draining organization is not the amount of mistakes they make, it's how they treat the people who make them. When a Unitarian Universalist congregation is doing its job well, it is actively and visibly moving its organization and its individual members toward wise compassion. And now I think our closing hymn, number 127.